This is podcast number 143 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today's topic is Liberty or Loyalty in the American Revolution. When I learned about the American Revolution in school, I got the impression all the colonists were united against the British, but that simply isn't true. I read that only about a third truly supported the cause. A third were fence sitters, and a third had no desire whatsoever to sever ties with the king. Today, Sampler talks about this very thing and is taken from a 1915 book called Pioneers and Patriots by Marguerite Dixon. The chapter is called Liberty or Loyalty. We must not make the mistake of supposing that every American in Revolutionary days fought for independence, or, if not fighting, gave what help he could in other ways. There were many people of America who looked upon the war as a most wicked rebellion against His Gracious Majesty, King George. They could not understand how their neighbors and friends could take part in such wicked business. Most of them, at the beginning of the struggle, had no doubt that England would make short work of subduing the rebellious colonists, and they looked forward to long lives as subjects of the king. Naturally enough, many of these loyalists, as they were called from their loyalty to the English government, wanted to help the English soldiers to put an end to the war, and so they joined the British Army. There were whole regiments fighting for England which were made up of American loyalists. Others had no heart to fight against their neighbors and one-time friends. Some of these left their homes going to Halifax or to England. Some tried to live quietly at home. Some gave secret aid to the king's soldiers, and if they were found out, received rough treatment. Some received rough treatment anyway, simply because they were loyalists, or Tories, as the other party called them. The name Tory in itself meant nothing bad or disgraceful. Whig and Tory were the names of English political parties, as Republican and Democrat are in our own century today. Of course, there were Whigs and Tories in the English colonies, too. The Whigs in both the colonies and the mother country took the part of the resisting Americans, and the Tories believed the English government was right. So when an American called another American a Tory, he meant merely a man loyal to the English government. Of course, as war went on, the feeling between Whigs and Tories grew bitter, and the very word Tory came to imply scorn. All sorts of cruel deeds were done as the war spirit grew. Quiet and harmless Tories were tormented because they could not believe as their neighbors did. Others were imprisoned or driven away from their homes. Tories, on the other hand, did their share of tormenting. They spied upon their Whig neighbors, and many a patriot soldier at home for a glimpse of wife and children was captured by bands of Tories or by British soldiers warned by Tory spies. Perhaps the most hated of all were those who would take neither side or who changed sides during the war. Nobody trusted them. Nobody dared trust them. It would perhaps be too much to expect that every man should be true to his best self at such a time. There were selfish men who would be sure to follow the stronger side of their own advantage. There were the timid ones who dared not choose the weak side even though they believed it right. And there were others that seemed to change with every wind that blew. When a British army encamped near them, they were all for England and the crown. When a turn of battle brought an American army, they were just as devoted to the cause of liberty and independence. Thus they hoped to make sure of their own safety. Michael Dougherty of Delaware was an unfortunate example of this changeable nature. He was a sergeant in the Continental Army, but was taken prisoner by the British. While in prison, he was approached by a British officer who offered him his freedom if he would take the king's side. Michael, won by what he calls the officer's perpetual blarney and the king's money, slipped into his hand, became a duly enlisted soldier in the British regiment which had captured him. Alas for Michael! His regiment was ordered to garrison Stony Point, and there Mad Anthony's men gave him an ugly wound and took him prisoner again. No doubt he had time to think over the matter seriously while his wound was healing. At any rate, he changed his sympathies and was forgiven and received back with kindness by his comrades in his old Delaware regiment. But at the Battle of Camden in South Carolina, the British won the day, and poor Michael soon found himself marched to the coast and shut up on a British prison ship. By that time, changing sides had probably become a habit, so we're not surprised to hear that, in the Battle of the Cowpens, Michael was again a valiant British soldier, and when the battle was over, again a prisoner to his friends, the enemy. What became of him after that, I cannot say, but he lived to tell the tale, which he concluded with these words, "I feel some qualms at the thought of battle since, take whatever side I will, I am always sure to find it the wrong one." I must tell you the story of Dr. Biles and his two daughters of Boston. For more than 40 years, the learned doctor was pastor of a church in his native town, but when trouble came between the colonies and the English government, his people were not satisfied with the good doctor's stand. He was careful not to say a word about politics or the questions that everybody else was talking excitedly about. Other preachers wrote sermons about the duty of the colonies to the kings or the wrongs of the American colonies, but never a word from Dr. Biles. At last, someone asked him why he expressed no opinion. His reply was, "In the first place, I don't understand politics. In the second place, you all do, every man and mother's son of you. In the third place, you have politics all the week. Pray let one day in 7 be devoted to religion." This, however, did not satisfy his Whig congregation. The people believed that he was a Tory at heart, and so he was, but of the sort that was disposed to keep out of the quarrel and allow those who felt more strongly than he to settle it. It was not too long before his Tory sympathies cost him his church, but he lived on in his old house in Boston. His daughters were far more interested than he. They welcomed to their father's house the British officers then stationed in Boston. They watched anxiously for news of British victories. They prayed for the success of England and the welfare of the British king. The old doctor was closely watched, you may be sure, and at one time during the war, he was tried and sentenced to be shut up in his own house under guard. It might have been worse, of course, and the old man, always cheerful, made the best of it, although the daughters more than offset his mildness by their indignant exclamations. One day it happened that the doctor was alone in the house, before which the sentinel marched back and forth on his usual guard duty. It also happened that the doctor found himself much in need of a servant or a messenger boy to do an errand for him. Unfortunately, he could not go himself, and there was no one else. Quite annoying, surely. Suddenly, with a twinkle in his shrewd old eyes, the doctor threw open the front door and hailed the guard. Now, I haven't a doubt that the militiaman pacing up and down before the doctor's door was very tired of his task, and I should be very little surprised to know what it seemed to him, rather a foolish precaution to guard this white-haired old man who had done nothing worse than to wish success to England in the war. Even so, he stood in open-mouthed astonishment when the doctor coolly proposed that he, the guard, go on an errand for his prisoner. "But, sir," he stammered, who would stand guard over you, sir?" "I'm quite capable of shouldering a musket myself," replied the old doctor. "Go on, I'll do sentry duty." The strangest part of the story is that the sentinel agreed, leaving the prisoner to march gravely back and forth for an hour or more till his return. Once the doctor and his daughters were ordered to be sent to England, but the sentence was not carried out. Instead, they remained in their old home while the war went on and finally ended in the independence of the American colonies. The hopes and prayers of the doctor's daughters had gained them nothing. Still, however, they were loyal to King George. The father died, but the daughters lived in Boston for 50 years after the war, unchanging loyalists to the days of their death. The people around them might yield to the rulers of the states. They were, as they had always been, subjects of the king. Their old-fashioned house was kept as in their father's day. Their treasures were from England, and as old or older than themselves. They talked of the old days when they were taken to walk on the common by General Howe and Lord Percy of the king's army, and of the band which played beneath their windows by the order of these officers. As death approached, they found great comfort in the knowledge that not a creature in the States will be any better for what we shall leave behind us. To them the war was always a rebellion, and they never forgot nor forgave the deeds of their misguided countrymen. We cannot help feeling sorry for the poor old ladies, although we rejoice in America's freedom and in the deeds of our patriot forefathers, which won it. There is a story of another old minister in Massachusetts which shows him, like his fellow Tory, Dr. Biles, a gentle and peace-loving man. For many years before the Revolution, he had been wont to pray, as other ministers did, for our excellent King George. And one Sunday after the war began, he, in an absent-minded way, offered the same prayer. He had scarcely spoken the words, King George, however, when he realized what he had said, and that his people would surely object. So he immediately went on, O Lord, I mean George Washington. There were not many Tories or harmless to the patriot cause as Dr. Biles, not many who could have been trusted to stand guard over themselves. On every hand we hear of Tory deeds. In the Mohawk Valley in New York State, they gathered together bands of Indians and, with their aid, carried on the most cruel and awful warfare. There were raids and massacres, murder and scalping, warfare not only against men, but against women and children. Everywhere through the middle colonies in the South there were more Tories than in New England, and the patriots of these sections had to fight not only British soldiers, but neighborhood Tories. Stories are still told in Pennsylvania of the five Doane brothers who left their home and carried on their warfare from the woods. They were the terror of the neighborhood, spying, robbing, dashing out from their hiding places, and doing all manner of harm to the patriot cause. Scarcely a town, north or south, but has its stories of Tory misdeeds. There is a story of a southern patriot whose plantation was left for months at a time in charge of his faithful slaves, while the master fought for liberty. One night the master suddenly appeared, and the slaves were rejoiced to see him, although they feared for his safety, for there were many Tories in the neighborhood. After a long talk about plantation matters, the weary soldier sought his bed and was soon sleeping soundly. The slaves kept watch, lest he should be surprised and captured. Suddenly, in the dark hours of the night, the slaves came running to rouse their master. "The Tories are coming, massa! They are coming, sure," they cried, even shaking the sleeping man to rouse him to his danger. He had scarcely wakened when he knew the slaves were right. Voices and hoofbeats told the story. There was little time in which to flee. Reassuring the frightened slaves, the soldier ran down the stairs and, still in his nightclothes, hastily concealed himself in a thickly growing shrub close to the house. There was no time to seek a more distant refuge. Scarcely had the crackling of twigs and the rustling of leaves ceased before the Tory band was upon him. He hardly dared breathe. In a moment the leader of the company was roughly demanding that the slaves lead him to their master. They protested loudly that they did not know where he was, and indeed they did not. They knew only that he was hidden somewhere. The voices grew louder and angrier. The slaves grew more and more frightened, but they were loyal in spite of fright. The Tories threatened them with whipping and with torture, but were at last convinced that they really did not know. Close beside the hiding place of the soldier, the Tories gathered and soon decided that they would burn the house. "He is probably in it somewhere, so we'll get him dead if not alive," said one. In a short time there was smoke and the crackling of flames. The fire burned rapidly, and the man in the bushes began to suffer from the heat. He had torn his scanty garments in getting to his hiding place, and now the heat was blistering his back and arms. It seemed as though he must cry out, but crying out meant capture and perhaps death. He bit his lips and endured the torment. At last, the Tory, seeing that the house was doomed, turned about and, with a last threat flung toward the weeping slaves clustered at a little distance, rode off. Then the master crept forth, scratched and bleeding, scorched and blistered, but he lived to fight again for liberty. One of the saddest things about the war for independence was the turning against each other of one-time friends and neighbors. But in most cases, people favored the side which they thought right, and we must allow to each the liberty of his own belief. Whigs and Tories called each other hard names, and when the Whigs were victorious and won independence, they treated the defeated Tories harshly. It is only in these later years that we can see that, if they were honest, they could only defend the right as they saw it. Oh, that's the lesson we need to learn today, isn't it? As we see so many divisions happening. Well, we'll be back with more for now. Bye-bye. See you next time.